This is KDLG's Bristol Bay and Beyond for Friday, February 13th. Thanks for joining us. Coming up this week, pot goes legal this month, and we'll ask Dillingham's attorney a few questions about what that means. The man who prosecuted the Leroy B. Dick Jr. case sits down to talk with us about that case, which closed with his sentencing on Thursday. We'll take a look at the way the puny winter is affecting normal business and fun around town. And the town's top speller stops by to take on a Valentine's Day spelling challenge from us. Those plus an essay from a recovering heroin addict after a look back at some of the week's news. Dillingham police are investigating the murder of Ella Olson, who was found dead last Saturday at a home on Cessna Drive. Police Chief Dan Pascarello has been leading the investigation, which he was careful to speculate on until Monday.
We were waiting for the results of an autopsy to come back for the determination of a cause of death. On Monday morning, the autopsy results indicated that the manner of death of Miss Olson was homicide.
Chief Pascarello is not willing to comment further about the cause of death or whether the department has any suspects yet in the case. He says tips and information provided by the public have been helpful. Former assistant superintendent of Dillingham City Schools, Danny Frazier, was hired to replace Bill McLeod, who you heard on this program last week. The school board voted unanimously to hire Frazier as interim head of the district for the remainder of this school year, but the vote was split 3-2 in offering him a contract for the 2015-16 school year. High school principal Bill Schwang was among those who testified in support of Frazier Monday night.
Board, Mr. Chairman, I just want to say a few things. I would say character, integrity, hard working, and as my grandfather used to say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Thank you.
We learned that the tiny Bering Strait community of Little Diomede has been without resupply of food or mail or any way on or off the island for 3 weeks now. Here's Andrea Akiapaluk, who works at the Diomede School.
Our store, it's pretty bare. We do have a bunch of food here at the school, which will last for a while.
The only aircraft offering regular service to the community has been down for maintenance. The Diomede School has been providing lunch and dinners to residents since last Saturday. And for only the second time in its history, the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race will now begin in Fairbanks rather than Willow. Stan Hooley is the CEO of the Iditarod Trail Committee.
It was a pretty easy decision to make when the consensus was that the conditions were far worse than they were last year.
We have more on those stories and the week's news at our website, kdlg.org. It's been an unusually tough week in Bristol Bay. Death, unexpected, has touched many of our friends and neighbors. In another instance, some of death's wounds are beginning to heal. The case of Leroy B. Dick Jr. came to a close when he was sentenced to 99 years in prison. Dick shot and killed unarmed VPSO Thomas Madole in Manicotic almost 2 years ago, on March 19, 2013. Assistant Attorney General Greg Olson, who works in the Office of Special Prosecutions and Appeals, prosecuted the case for the state, which led to a conviction after a trial last November in Dillingham. Olson sat down with me after the sentencing hearing yesterday. Greg, thanks for doing an interview with us. Appreciate being here. Tell me about today's sentencing hearing. There wasn't a big surprise to the result, but still an important thing to go through today.
It is. I mean, sentencing is a requirement of every judge in a case where somebody's been found guilty, and it's a right of a defendant to be sentenced by the judge. This case is somewhat unique from your average case because the jury made a special finding. It's a first-degree murder case, and the jury, as you recall, found that Leroy Dick Jr. killed a law enforcement officer who was in uniform, who was performing his duties. And because of that finding, there was really only one sentence the judge could give. It was a mandatory 99-year term. He's not eligible for either discretionary or mandatory parole. But there is a fail-safe, if you will, in the statute that after a defendant serves 50% of their sentence, they can apply to the court for a modification or reduction of their sentence.
You mentioned something today that I didn't know before, which was that you had interacted with Tom Madole years ago. Can you explain what that was and how that came about?
Yeah, since 2001, I've been an instructor at the Village Public Safety Officer Academy down in Sitka, and all the new VPSOs have to go through that academy. And I have taught up until this year a section of criminal law and criminal laws of arrest, laws of search warrants. Tom was in one of those classes several years ago when he became a VPSO. And we weren't close by any means, and I've dealt with a lot of law enforcement officers throughout the state. But I distinctly recall him. He was a stand-up person. He was clearly a leader of his group, of the group of VPSOs there, and was respected by them. And from back then, I knew him as a good person.
What about this case stood out to you?
Well, I think a couple things. I mean, I don't know if – I didn't learn it new, but there are no winners in cases like this. I mean, I go into court and I prosecute somebody and sure, the jury found him guilty. But beyond that, looking at the people involved, the Leroy Dix Jr.'s family have lost. Luann Madole and her children and grandkids have lost. And no matter what the system does – and it worked. It did what it was supposed to do, but we can never deal with that. It exists in every case, but I think it stood out really strong in this case. I recall at the end of the trial, and I think you also saw and reported on how the interaction between Luann Madole and Leroy Dix Jr.'s mother
there in the atrium of the court. Just after the verdict,
that's correct. I mean, they met. She had met, as I understand it, the weekend prior. There was a dedication of the public safety VPSO building, and she went to that community event, and then she met with Leroy's mother. But that stood out for me, and I think the other thing that stood out, and I don't see this regularly, and it's a very incredibly hard thing, was the. The element of forgiveness that Luann Madole expressed.
I heard it today. It was incredibly powerful. I think everyone in the courtroom was moved to hear that, and probably even since that during the trial. You probably had a number of interactions with her. What was your take on her coming through this terrible process?
I think that it was a terrible thing for her. It was a horrible thing for her, but she had the ability that many people do, but a lot of people don't, that she was able to step back and rely on her faith and use that as her ability to move forward and deal with life and deal with the situation. And I think that it helped her, obviously, that her faith was the same faith that Tom had, and they lived that faith together.
Leroy Dix, an easy man to prosecute for you?
That's a tough question. I mean, my job is to prosecute people. What he did was wrong. The sentence he received ultimately was the correct sentence. I said during the sentencing that every murder is wrong, but in my view, we ask law enforcement officers to do for us things that we can't do for ourselves. And the VPSO is particularly placed in a situation that they do more than most law enforcement officers would do. Was it an easy case to prosecute?
Was he an easy person to prosecute?
You know, I don't know how to answer that. My job was to prosecute him. I did that. What he did was evil. Is he an evil person? I don't know. I've seen people that in my view, are much more evil than he is. Whatever the circumstances were, what he did was wrong, and he's paying that price now.
Greg, thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
Again, that's Assistant Attorney General Greg Olson, who works in the state's Office of Special Prosecutions and Appeals. And this is Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. Back in a moment. Well, we know that it's not been much of a winter, at least yet, for much of Alaska, and especially here in Bristol Bay. It could turn around, of course, and some of last week's snow has encouraged quite a few folks to trailer snow machines up to the Wood-Tikchik State Park to try. Others are out attempting to stake land as best as possible at Snake Lake this weekend. We sent our new reporter Matt Martin out around town to see how the winter is affecting some.
I find it somewhat ironic that I'm talking about how the lack of snow is affecting people on a day that it's snowing. But I guess that's probably a relief to most people here.
My first stop is L&M Hardware to speak with parts manager Mark Gleason. Mark says this is the worst winter he's seen in 22 years, but he says that life goes on and many people have just been using their four-wheelers to get around, among other things.
Funny enough, boats. There's a lot of time this winter when, you know, the rivers and whatnot have been ice-free. And so people have been using modes of transportation that they don't normally use during the winter.
Snow machine sales have been way down at L&M this year, and Gleason tells me that's true around the state.
It's getting to the point to where if there's, you know, not a true promise of snow, people are going to hold off a year. And this has happened 2 years in a row now. So we are going to be thick with unsold machinery.
I cross 2nd Ave to visit Kyle Rolfe at L&M's repair shop.
Hey.
Hi.
What's up?
Kyle?
That's what my mom calls me.
Is it what I can call you?
Depends. Who are you?
After a quick introduction, Kyle gets right to the point.
This winter and last winter are just complete freaks of nature compared to what I know. I mean, if you went out riding for a half a day, you'd probably have to stay in bed for a day. It'd be so rough and nasty out there, you know?
He tells me that when the snow is good, he and his team can barely keep up with demand.
I mean, actually, the mechanics are out moving lumber and stuff around, you know, and normally we don't have time to do anything but work on, you know, mechanical things.
Rolfe says work is so slow, he's actually moving to Hawaii at the end of the month. He's leaving for a job to work on outboard motors.
There's never an off season over there, so be busy all the time.
So, I mean, was the lack of snow, like, was that a factor in your decision?
Actually, it was. You know, the days go by a lot faster when you actually have work to do.
He tells me if Hawaii doesn't work out, he can always head back home. I headed over next to Delta Western.
Ooh, stay with me, battery. Stay with me.
Ken Ricewig, owner of one of Dillingham's three main fuel suppliers, says it's not the lack of snow that's his concern.
It's not particularly the snow, but the warm temperatures that have affected us the most. The warm temperatures mean that people don't burn as much heating fuel, so we don't sell as much.
Grocery stores in Dillingham, like the N&N Marketplace, say business they normally see from the villages in the winter is down because most of the trails haven't opened yet. I'm new here, but I can tell recreation has suffered too. Hunters are struggling to hunt, trappers to trap. Fish and Game says the number of reported harvests are down. Ptarmigan haven't come down from the mountains yet, I'm told. Skiers can ski, but apparently not much. And what about other festivals? Charlene Lopez says Dillingham's Beaver Roundup may be forced to cancel the dog sled races again.
We're trying to do what we can to beef up the schedule, but also see what we can still do traditional ways. And it is kind of terrible if for some reason we do have to cancel the dog races being the second year, but we need snow for those for the mushers and the dogs for their safety. That's what we need.
So I got off the plane about a week ago, brand new to Dillingham and Alaska. It dawned on me pretty quick that real winter with some real snow is pretty important to business, fun, and life in a lot of Bristol Bay. Maybe it's not too late? I'm Matt Martin for KDLG.
This is Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. Alaska voters passed ballot measure 2 in the November general election, and that means that on February 24th, the possession and personal use of some amounts of pot will now be legal in the state. Dillingham City Attorney Brooks Chandler gave the City Council some advice on what to be ready for and what options communities have in the state in the year ahead. Brooks joins us now to share some of that here. Brooks, glad to have you.
You're welcome.
What jumps out to you first and foremost that people, whether they're totally aware or not, ought to be aware of on February 24th about ballot measure 2 here?
Well, that is the day when possessing small amounts of marijuana becomes legal throughout Alaska, and I think most folks are generally aware of that. They also need to be aware that the Proposition 2 specifically prohibited using marijuana in a public place, so the what becomes legal doesn't necessarily mean you are going to be able to light up in public in Dillingham.
So that means possess and use primarily, I guess the intent is at your home or someone's home.
Anywhere that's not a public place, yes.
What concerns are you hearing so far about just the possession and use that you're maybe advising some of the communities you represent to be aware of at this point?
Well, the concerns are actually relatively few when it comes down to the personal possession and use aspect of Proposition number 2. The primary one I've heard raised has to do with folks that live in apartment houses and may have marijuana users next door to non-users, and whether there will be impacts of odor that create disagreements among neighbors.
Let me ask another question along these personal use and possession lines. If it's not in public and you have a bag of pot in your pocket when you go out to shop for groceries and you're stopped for any reason, are you in violation of the law?
Well, the current proposal, which has yet to be officially enacted at the state level, does sort of add marijuana to the open container concept when it comes to motor vehicles. There is going to be, I believe, under state law, probably enacted by February 24th, but maybe not. There is going to be a prohibition on carrying an open container of marijuana in an automobile, much as there is a prohibition on carrying an open bottle of beer or whiskey in an automobile now. So if you're wanting to stay strictly within the law, when you went out to drive on February 24, you would put your marijuana in the trunk of your car.
All right. One reason why I specifically wanted to speak with you today is that you've been helping advise communities a bit of what they can do as pertains to the other side of this law, which was the commercial sale of marijuana. And you brought that message to the Dillingham City Council this month. My take and what I'm hearing from around the state is that Dillingham and many communities are a little bit flat-footed right now on knowing what their options are and doing anything about those options. Maybe you can elaborate what you're seeing and what you're helping communities know they can or don't need to do based on their preference.
One of the primary messages I've been wanting to make sure that the communities I work with understand is that they do have options when it comes to commercial aspects of legal marijuana in Alaska. The Proposition 2 very specifically reserved to each community in Alaska the ability to prohibit some or all types of commercial components of marijuana, which would include growing, processing, and manufacturing, and retail stores.
What are you getting a sense of so far? Are communities considering this, or do they view it more? Are you getting a sense that some communities are viewing it as a potential tax revenue to allow for the some commercial aspect in their area?
No, I don't believe communities have gotten to that point of, you know, what are the tax revenue options available. I think what's happening throughout Alaska is that there are local discussions, whether it be in official city council meetings or informal town hall settings, in where elected officials are sort of reaching out to residents and trying to assess what is the desire of the folks that live in the community when it comes to commercial sales.
Well, it sounds like there are probably many discussions yet to be had, and there's another year to have these discussions and put something into place, correct?
Yes, about a year. The way the landscape works at the state level is that the November 24 is the next sort of significant deadline. By that date, there are supposed to be state regulations in place that would establish rules for applying for licenses or permits to conduct commercial operations.
Brooks Chandler is the attorney for the city of Dillingham. Brooks, thanks so much.
You're very welcome, Dave.
Let's move from one drug to another, heroin and its substitutes in prescription pill form. It's harming Bristol Bay communities and harming those who've become addicted to it. A friend of ours was addicted to heroin for several years. She is clean now and getting her life back together. She's struggling to find a way to help others make the almost impossible choice to kick the addiction. And she tells us that she's been troubled by the desperation she sees other users dealing with to fund their habit and stay high. We asked her to write us an essay about this, which she did, but we asked someone else to read it, and we hope you understand why we've decided not to use either the author or the reader's names. Here it is.
I'm going to guess that I don't look like your average, stereotypical heroin addict. That's because I've been clean. Or maybe because the stigma the general public gives to the user is what we adopt as our own self-worth. And that's an ugly mental picture. If I could show you my intentions, behaviors, and conscience, you would see that all of my character has found a new identity. Heroin. When you're using heroin, everything becomes a reason to use it. You're upset. It will make you feel better. You need to celebrate. There's no better reason to get high. When the feeling of being high is not so high anymore, it's just feeling normal. When the fear and anxiety of not feeling normal sets in, then survival mode is to get heroin at any cost. This obsession hijacked every part of my existence. Before I think about food to eat, water to drink, or even sleep, I first have this insatiable need to find the drug. Heroin changes your perceptions. I was wearing magnifying glasses. All I could ever see was heroin, close up. The meaning of relationships are reduced to how I can use this person to get me some heroin. The reason to have a job is no longer to meet my basic necessities in life. It's just to make money for heroin. You no longer see the value in money. All you know is how much heroin the money is worth and how long it will keep you from feeling really ill, because without the drug, you do not feel normal. I don't want to talk about the new level of morality our community is living under. We know about the crimes that have been committed in town in the name of heroin. It's easy for me to see how a person will sacrifice their freedom, their life, and the safety of others for a four-hour fix. No one is rich in the drug market. Some people will sell the drug just to have money to use it. All of the money they make goes back into heroin. The best description of the afflicted is this quote by William Burroughs. The junk merchant doesn't sell his product to the consumer. He sells the consumer to his product. He does not improve and simplify his merchandise. He degrades and simplifies the client. You see, my life used to be a huge obsession over acquiring and using one substance, a drug that would have killed me. Now I'm clean. Each day, I step towards changing my reason for being, back to things people ought to live for.
running to stand still.
Going to end this week's show on a much different note. The Dillingham City School District held its annual Spelling Bee this week to qualify the district's top speller for the state Spelling Bee next month in Anchorage. It was neck and neck until the very end Wednesday night. The winner sat down with our new reporter, Hannah Colton.
My name is Skylar Tuckwood, and I'm in fourth grade.
Thanks so much for joining us, Skylar. And I got to see you win last night at the Spelling Bee at the elementary school. Tell me about how you felt going in and then how you felt when you got to the final two.
When I first got in, I was kind of scared because I thought I was going to get out on, like, the first round, but I didn't. I lasted until, like, there was last two, and he would get it right, and then I would get it right. Then we just kept going back and forth. And the word he got out on, I couldn't spell, and then they were going to give it to me. When I got home, I looked at it, and it was C-U-R-T-O-R, and I couldn't spell that word in the spelling bee.
Curator, right?
Yeah. And then they gave me a different word, and it was dim sum.
Do you know what dim sum is?
No.
But you just spelled it out in your head. That's amazing. What did you do to practice for the spelling bee?
We practiced for like 2 weeks, and then we went off to New Zealand for 3 weeks, and we didn't practice at all there. And then we got back. We practiced, but not as much as we did. And then the night before the spelling bee, I practiced really hard. And then right before I went over to the spelling bee, I practiced like every single word.
Okay, so you had lists of words to look at. Did you practice with your friends or with your parents or what?
I practiced by myself. I like said the word and closed my eyes and spelled it and then went on to the next one.
I noticed when some students got up there, they would kind of write on their hand as if they were writing the word. Did you do anything like that when you were up on stage?
When I had my hands behind my back, I did that.
Okay.
And when the Miss P, she said the word and was giving me the definition in the sentence, I would, like, spell that in my head while she was saying the definition and that stuff.
I see. Well, you spelled very confidently up there.
Thanks.
So I noticed last night that there were some Valentine's-related words already in the B. We heard tulip, ballad, and even Romeo.
Yeah.
So I thought that in honor of your win and of this weekend's holiday, I'd ask you to spell a few more. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to play the pronouncer now.
Okay.
First word is love. Love is a beautiful thing. Love.
Love. L-O-V-E. Love.
That is correct. Good job. Next word is romantic. February 14th is known as the most romantic day of the year. Romantic.
Romantic. R-O-M-A-N-T-I-C.
Nice. Very nice. And the last word is sweetheart. Every day the boy wrote a letter to his sweetheart. Sweetheart.
Sweetheart. S-W-E-E-T-H-E-A-R-T, sweetheart.
Correct. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming in today. We're looking forward to seeing your performance in the statewide competition in Anchorage on March 5th. Are you looking forward to it?
Yeah.
Well, good luck and congratulations again.
Thank you.
L is for the way you look at me. O
is for the only one I see. V is very, very extraordinary. E is even more than anyone that you adore can love. Is all that I can give to you. Love is more than just a game for two. Two in love can make it. Take my heart and please don't break it. Love was made for me and you.
And that's it for this week's Bristol Bay and Beyond. We're happy to have help this week from Matt Martin and Hannah Colton, both new to the KDLG News crew. Send us your feedback and ideas to news@kdlg.org or to me at dave@kdlg.org. 842-2200 is the news line. You'll find this week's show later online at our website, kdlg.org. Join us again next Friday. Happy Valentine's Day. Thanks for listening.
L is for the way you look at me. O is for the only one I see. V is very, very extraordinary. E is even more than anyone that you adore can love. Is all that I can give to you. Love is more than just a game for two. Two in love can't make it. Take my heart and please don't break it. Love was made for me and you. Love was made for me and you. Love was made for me and you.